This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't a part of my judgment, my own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. And rest in peace, Robin Williams. Thank you for the introduction. That's right. I am in Hanoi, Vietnam right now on a pretty crazy vacation. Very happy to take some time to actually put this one up. I know last week I got a little lazy. I was in Thailand on the beaches of Phi Phi Island and sometimes the podcast just isn't going to happen. And last week was one of those weeks. But I think this week we are more than making up for it with a great episode, a long-awaited guest, a highly requested guest. Cody Carson of Set It Off joins the show, a band that has had so many ups and downs with their sound, ups and downs with their popularity, but they have a new record that is out now. This is making some waves. This is making some waves. We have great episodes. Sit back, relax, enjoy. I gotta say, I have really enjoyed the last 2 weeks I've been over here in Asia. Shout out to all my Singaporean new friends. Shout out to Mr. Rainer Ho. I got to play my first Chinese wedding. I played all the hits. It was beautiful. People were so nice, so respectful to me. I had an amazing time over there. Thailand was amazing. Bangkok was amazing. Vietnam's been amazing as well. I got one last stop in Hong Kong before I head home. And it's back to work. Work, if you can call it that. And I gotta say, I know some people weren't so happy that I skipped a week last week. You know what? That's what the hate line's for. And some people called it. Keep those calls coming. If you're not so happy, dial 1-657-666-HATE. Leave me a message of hate. I do sort of enjoy it. But if you want to hit me up, of course, you can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Hit us up on all the social media outlets, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us. You can give me praise. You can give me suggestions for upcoming guests of the show. Really, whatever you want to say is all good. And I guess the biggest news with me on the music side is Silverstein will be playing the West Coast edition of Warped Tour. Warped Tour 25th anniversary. And it is something that's near and dear to my heart. I went to my first one in 1997, which was the third year they ever did it, and I attended it every single year since. So it's going to be like 23 Warped Tours in a row for me, and what a lineup they put together. I mean, both on the East Coast and the West Coast. They are bonkers. Some of my favorite bands are playing. So very, very excited to announce that. Tickets are going fast, but check them out. I think it's warpedtour.com or vanswarpedtour.com. Again, nobody even uses URLs. Just type it in the search bar and it works. So we'll see y'all at Warped Tour. Another reminder, if you want to help out the show, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. There's tons of bonus stuff on there. If I take another week off, which I'm not planning on doing, but you know, sometimes these things aren't planned, you could go back. You could listen to all, whatever, dozens and dozens of bonus episodes that I've put out. A lot of them with non-lead singers, which is always an interesting take. You get all that, plus you get swag shipped to your house, and you get to join an amazing community of like-minded fans of music, fans of the show. We have a great time. So check it out. It's as little as $6 a month that gets you in. The link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all-access. And you know what? We hit over 300 members now. I think we're at like 310 members. Very, very cool. A lot of people have been joining. I love to see this. I mean, I get it. You want to help me out? It's a good deal. It's a good bargain. And you're going to make a whole bunch of new friends from all over the world. We have people from, I don't know how many countries, but it's got to be like 12, 15 countries. So very cool community, and I'm really proud of all the things with this podcast. That is one of the things I'm most proud of. So check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. I think that's about all for this intro, but this is a good episode, a really good conversation with Cody Carson of Set It Off.
Tell me how you're sleeping easy, how you're only thinking of yourself. Show me how you justify, tell me how your mind's like second nature. Listen, mark my words, one day you will pay, you will pay. Karma's gonna come collect your debt.
Yo, what's up?
Cody, man, how are you?
I'm doing good, man.
Awesome.
Day's starting, I'm feeling good.
What's that, sir?
My day's starting, I'm feeling good.
Day's starting. Well, it's good. I mean, that's better than not feeling good, especially when you're on tour. You know?
Absolutely.
There's nothing worse than when you wake up, you know, and it's like, you didn't party the night before. You got a great sleep. You know what I mean? Everything's fine. Great show. And just for some reason, you wake up and you're like, something's off, man. Something's not right.
Yeah, my voice is shot or something.
Exactly,
that's
right? For no reason. But yeah. But dude, it's been a while, man. How you been?
I'm doing good, man. There's been a lot that's been going on. We've been working really hard on the new record that we just released. And I'm just excited that it's out and being able to play new songs and play a proper headline set. It's satisfying. It's
absolutely. Nice. Absolutely. So yeah, you guys are out in California. I think it's Santa Cruz today, if I'm correct.
You're right.
And yeah, you got a bunch of shows coming up. Man, I guess, shit, let's just jump in with the new record, Midnight. It's it just came out, and I guess the biggest thing, you know, a lot of times this podcast is a little more industry, you know, driven, people from the industry and stuff, you know, listen to this show and whatever. And for you guys, big change, a new label, new management, obviously the sound we're going to get to, but even just those little changes, you know, make a big difference when you're talking about launching this new album.
They really do, because it's so interesting, because when you start working with different people, obviously everyone thinks differently, works differently, right. And you have to get to know that line of communication. And I think our biggest thing when we were forming this new team around us was we just wanted people that really just gave a shit, you know, like people that really, I mean, like, you know, you don't think about, it's weird to say it like that, but I mean, like, you don't think about that sometimes. Like, a lot of people can talk and about their connections and what they'll do, and just seeing someone's heart pour into something is totally different. And that's what we've seen from everyone that's working with us now, is they're just really hungry, and they have a chip on their shoulder like we do, and it feels good to be around them. And like, everyone's just constantly trying to get the best out of everything, and I'm stoked, man. I love everyone that we're working with.
That's great. I mean, that's better than the alternative. obviously, like you know, no one's ever said, yeah, well, it was better before, but I guess we got to roll it with it, you know, for a little
not
while at least.
Now.
Well, dude, I mean, I don't know where to start even with there's just so much to talk about. seriously, dude. And you know, one way I like to talk from the beginning and go a little chronologically, you know, with things.
Yeah.
And I think with you guys, it's you've had an interesting career, because musically you sort of started out, you know, like a poppier band, you know, a pop punk band. And then you kind of, your sound changed. You sort of filled a bit of a void, you know, with maybe My Chemical Romance breaking up and, you know, and AFI going away. And you took some of those influences and now it's gone all the way back, maybe even further back, to, you know, to the straight pop stuff. I don't know, man. Like, obviously this isn't something that's been calculated the whole way, right? I mean, a lot of it's just sort of worked out that way.
Well, I mean, it's whatever era we've been in, we've always been just like an intense version of ourselves, I guess is the best way to word that.
Yeah.
Like when we first started out, like, we were heavily influenced by that 2008 scene of the pop, like, you know, pop punk, pop rock sound. And so that really shined through in a way like that. But I was talking with a producer at the time. We were unsigned at this time. And I always appreciate really straightforward advice. And like, even if it sounds like it should hurt, he said to me, he goes, right now you guys are basically just like a number in a fishbowl. Opening a label's like, oh, we'll pick up this band that sounds like this. And I was like, shit. That's true, but I guess maybe we need to, you know, individualize ourselves a bit more. So when we changed our sound and went darker, you're not wrong. That thought was there about, you know, Mike and broke up. There's this open void. There's not really someone doing the sound. And also, I went to school for classical music, and I wasn't utilizing any of that knowledge. And so I was like, well, then let's merge the two with like orchestral sounds and that. And so we did that, and then we were polarizing ourselves, I think, too much, like to where we felt outside of ourselves. It was almost like after an album, we're like, all right, this might be too dark. Which sounds ridiculous. But then we're like, we got with a producer named Brian Paddock, and that's kind of where things started to change for us. Like, I grew up listening to whatever my sister listened to. Like she was listening to like Destiny's Child, Usher. And then I found it NSYNC, and I was such a boy band fanatic. And my dad listened to like, oh yeah, oh, massive fan. And my dad was like in the Tower of Power, and you know, I found new metal. It's like all these ridiculous influences trying to merge into one. And we wrote a song, Why Worry With It. And it was the first time I've ever been able to really, really feel, take the songs that I listened to growing up and find a way to merge them into what we're doing. And that's when I got like, I think we all got really excited, because I feel like we felt like we were finally on to something. But like, I feel like we were always trying to find our true identity is what it was. Like, totally. Like that, I feel like it's the hardest part of being a band is, like, understanding just who you are, just like that person, you know, like, who am I? What is my purpose? What am I here for? And then someday you're writing a song, it seems to click, and then you kind of roll with it. And with Midnight, it was kind of, you know, after Duality, which is what Why Worry was, we went too pop, to be totally honest with you. Like, that's just how I felt. Like, at the time, it didn't feel like that. You know, I was just really happy. And so I was writing because I was happy with the songs, came out happier, came out more major key. And I think it rubbed some people the wrong way. And just because they were so used to having, and so with Midnight, this new one, I felt like this was all into one, and where it truly feels like us.
Right, man. Totally, totally. I lost you for a second, but I think I got it all. Yeah, man. Well, yeah, it's interesting you say that. And I do agree. Like, you guys were always very sort of intense, and you still are intense about everything that you do. And when you're trying to do, you know, some of that, I don't know if like horror punk is the right like word to just throw out there, because that wouldn't be really, you know, that would do a disservice to what you guys were doing. But, you know, like when you think of some of those other bands, like, you know, like, you know, you guys were doing collaborations with like New Year's Day on Warped Tour stage, you know, and things like that, like bands like that, that are very, you know, they're wearing makeup and they have a very heavy image, towards their music. And it's like, I totally get it, how you guys could be just kind of wake up one day and be like, okay, well, we've aligned ourselves in this scene, and now people expect a certain darkness that maybe we're not really able to continually provide. So going pop, as much as that seems to some people like, oh, fucking sellouts, it's like, actually, no, they're actually doing what they want to do. They were almost selling out before, if anything, you know?
Yeah, like you were saying, like we mentioned before, like, I think a lot of people forget that our old EP, Come From The Storm, exists. Like, yeah, we started off this way.
That's what it's, that was the whole beginning. Our, yeah. Exactly. The whole beginning of what I said is like 2008. Yeah, yeah. You know, it was, you know, you singing All Time Low, you know, videos and all that, and then going on stage with them. And, you know, so like, I don't know, man, I think like it totally makes sense. But one thing that I find about your band, and, you know, you mentioned really quickly about your classical background and stuff and your trained musical background. Whenever I hear your band, no matter whether you're doing like a pop punk thing or a, sorry to say, horror punk thing or a pop thing, I like always know it's your band because there's a certain style of like chord progressions and stuff that you use. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't just, I wrote down the question here. I never really look at my questions, but you know, it's like, you don't settle for traditional chord progressions. You know, you're always trying to look for that edge that makes you guys have that, you know, sort of interesting, unique sound.
That's fair. That's fair to say. I'd say like when we go in to write, like our biggest thing every time, obviously, and I think this is kind of redundant to say, but it's the truth, is you always want to, you know, beat what you did last and raise the bar for yourself on the next one. And I feel like we kind of treat songs that way in general. As we try to, like, you know, how can we spice this up, make it interesting? Like, there's a song on the album Midnight called Happy All the Time, which I remember. So we wrote that with Sky from Issues. He's an amazing bassist. Unbelievable bassist.
What a great dude. I love that guy.
He is a great guy and musically unbelievably intelligent. It was such a pleasure to work with him. But when we first started working, he sat down on the keyboard and started playing these really, like, complex chords on the synth tone. And I won't lie, when it first happened, I was like, is this set it off? Like, this feels almost like too out there.
Yeah.
And then the beat got laid under it, and then all of a sudden something clicked. I was like, oh, no, wait, this can totally be us. This just felt right at that moment. But it was just fun to be, because that's why we wanted to work with them, is we love those funky chord progressions and finding a way to make them make sense in our genre. And it was so fun to see him just kind of lay that out there. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. It must be difficult for you guys, though, now when you work on something and you go, is this set it off? And it's like, well, I mean, anything can be set it off at this point.
And that's what I love now. Like, it's like, I feel free, you know, musically, right. I feel like we can do whatever we want. And that, because we've tried so many things just for the hell of it. And it's really exciting to know that we don't have to feel like we have to fit within a box when we're going to write. Like, we can do whatever we want, write as many songs as we want. And whatever we feel like works the best, we stick with.
Totally, man. Totally. Well, when you make these kind of changes, obviously not everyone's going to be on board, you know, and you're going to have obviously a lot of people that are either industry people or your friends or your families. A lot of those people are just going to be like, oh yeah, it's really cool. Like, I love the new direction. You know, I don't want to say that they're all like going to be yes men, but there's an element of that, right? So is it hard for you to gauge if like where you're taking things is going to be, it's going to work with your fan base, or if you're going to really alienate some of those core fans that have been with you guys for, you know, over a decade?
With this most recent release, I think I'm getting better at gauging it now, because you can kind of tell by finding the places where people leave comments that they don't think you'll watch. You know what I mean? Like, like if there's a YouTube video, like, for some reason, no one thinks anyone's going to watch that, or they just don't care, and they'll be brutally honest there.
Yeah.
And that's great. I love that. Or sometimes people will do their own album reviews of things. And usually I will gauge it by just kind of, you know, feeling out, seeing what the public thinks about it. And, you know, like, before Upside Down, it was always just like a positive trajectory. I've never felt like we took a step back. And then Upside Down, like, I don't want to, you know, shit on that record. I'm really proud of every one of those songs. But I know that the general reaction was, you know, we like it, but it's not exactly what we know you for. And I saw that in, like, you know, comments and reactions like that. But the overall response to this one has definitely been a change in a positive direction. And I'm happy for that, obviously. But
no,
yeah, that's the one to gauge it. You kind of have to hurt yourself, you know? Like, I feel like you really have to put yourself out there. And just be willing to get your heart broken, because you know, records are so personal. You know, you're doing what you think is the best you've ever done at all times. You have to try new things, roll the dice, and hope to God that this hits, because this is our livelihood. It's what we love to do. And then someone on the internet can just shit all over it. And it's like Instagram comments or something, like, you know, like, you can get 1,000 positives, or like you said, like, your friend and family can yes man you all day. But the one person that says something negative, man, that just sticks with you and it stings. But you kind of need it, man. You especially, really do.
Especially when, like, deep in your heart, you know they're right. You know?
Oh, my,
like,
God.
When
that's
you're
the
like,
worst.
Damn it. How? Damn it. And in you, like, you five want, words, they somehow, them, like,
and then you're like, all right, that's a fair point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know you got, like, Duality was a big record for you guys, you know, and you know, I guess, you know, Upside Down, it really kind of didn't, you know, it did kind of get lost in the shuffle a little bit, and I feel like you guys are almost kind of okay with just pushing forward at this point, and I guess there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I know, you gotta be honest about it, man. Like, it is what it is. We were in a transitional time. Like, we knew that was our last record with EDR, and they were amazing with us all, you know, until that point. And we were with new management that obviously didn't work out, and then, like, you know, to be honest, like, after that, I was in a really dark period mentally and emotionally, dude. Like,
yeah,
because it's one of those times where, like, I feel every band member just had this thought of just, am I supposed to be doing this? You know, like, you sit down and you start questioning your life and your career. And I fucking broke down in the middle of a grocery store Like, it was tough to do, but I think through that pain is what helped kind of put these songs together. It's just like it was a necessary feeling to get this out and to really get all that off of my chest.
So what was it that hit you so hard? Was it just that it wasn't successful? That it didn't come out the way you envisioned it? That
we had new management, and where it really hit me hard was after the cycle started, had its fair shot, and we realized it wasn't taking off the way we hoped it would, that our team basically just let us go. And that's never happened to us before. And it felt like a total rejection. For the first time, just unwanted. I was like, wow, okay, this sucks. This hurts, man. Again, going back to what I was saying before about comments, this is my baby, this is my life, and I'm basically being told by someone that they don't believe in it. And that's not easy to deal with. And it was something that I feel like I'm really good at dealing with hardships in my life. At least I try to be, whether it's just talking about it openly. I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I don't care about I always talk about how I think it sucks that I feel like some band members, we feel like we have to act invincible. Oh, everything's great. Everything's perfect. When it's fucking not. I sometimes don't know how to deal with it, and I'll bottle it up, and it just all came down at me at once, and I just exploded. But it was it was hard to deal with, but it was also, it reinvigorated us, and I think that's what it sparked the idea for the change for the next record. Was like, you know what, we need to find out, let's reevaluate ourselves here, and we need to make a change, and that's what the product of Midnight ended up being.
Damn, dude. Well, I'm really glad to hear that you're. You got out of that spot and better than ever. And, Fearless Records. No, dude, absolutely. This is what we're here for, man. Therapy through podcasts,
Oh, I love it.
Absolutely, man. So if I know we've already been talking a little bit about some things, but I would love to, dive a little deeper into your past. I know you guys, you talk constantly about how important, high school music programs were, for you, for your bandmates. You guys have given back to that community through some charity work and stuff. But one of the little tidbits about your band that I love is how you're a clarinet player. Yeah. I love that. Of all instruments, that's and I'm not making fun of you, but it's some people in punk rock and stuff, someone would learn the trumpet or the trombone or the saxophone because that's in ska music. Yeah. But clarinet, Nick, never is.
Out of left field, completely out of left field.
Yeah, but talk to me a little bit about your musical upbringing. I know your parents were really involved in music, and they're musicians as well. Talk to me about that and kind of where that's led.
Well, yeah, so my parents were in a band together, and me and my sister, we had a nanny when they would have to go out on the road, and when they could, we would go on tour with them. And that was just such a blast. We'd literally be side stage watching them perform. And once we were old enough too, they would give us little segments to come on stage and perform. And when I was playing clarinet, that was one of the things. I'd come up and I'd play a song on clarinet, and then I would go on stage and watch the rest of the show. But I started that because my grandfather plays every woodwind instrument you can imagine. He was teaching my sister how to play saxophone one day, and I wanted to learn because I thought it was cool. And I was too small for the saxophone at the time. I was 8 years old. He goes, oh, you can play the smaller version of the sax. So I got my first clarinet lesson from him when I was 8. And
at least it wasn't
was
a flute.
Oh, I know, right? Oh, I'm terrible. So I tried. But yeah, I played that ever since, and it ended up being it ended up becoming serious for me. I kept playing in band in middle school and in high school. I was doing all state stuff, all county, and ended up getting accepted to a music conservatory, Overland Music Conservatory. And I was in bands in high school. I remember I started as a drummer. And it's kind of fun to talk about this on Lead Singer Center, but I was not a singer, and I wanted to be badly. And as a backup, background vocalist / drummer. And at one point, a member of the band said, you should really just stick to drums. I'll never forget that for a long time. But I remember I wanted to be in these bands because once I got a taste of that, compared to being in a classical sort of setting, classical music is crazy because you have to rehearse 4 hours a day. Right. And it's like so difficult. And then when you finally get your recital and you pull for everybody, you get like a golf clap and maybe they'll stand. And it's like, come on, man. Like, but, and then the reaction you get at a rock show is absolutely obviously different. So I was in these bands. I was in a band literally called One More Shot because it was my last shot before I went off to college to try to make it. And so I, obviously it didn't happen. So we, I went off to college in Oberlin, and as much as I was stoked to be pursuing something I knew I could possibly make a career out of, I missed it, man. I missed it so much.
Yeah.
That's where the whole covers in the bedroom thing started and starting to write my own stuff started. And I was just trying to find a band there, but no one there gave a shit about the music I loved. They were always like, I wanted to talk about Newfound Glory at lunch. And they're like, yeah, but what about like Mahler's Fifth? And I was like, oh, I don't know.
So, you know, one thing about your new sound, I guess, with going the more pop, you know, road, there's a couple things at play. The first one is, are you guys trying to get some radio play happening? Is it more mainstream kind of stuff? Like, is the goal to try to get a Grammy nomination, collaborate with those people? No, I mean, I'm being serious. Like, is there a goal there? Is there any thought in the back of your head of that's the direction you're going to take the band?
Well, I mean, obviously it'd be amazing to get radio, but in a realistic world, I don't ever go like, it's going to happen. We're going to go shoot for radio. We just write the songs that we want to write. And hopefully if that opportunity presents itself and there's the budget for that, then awesome, let's do it. But the Grammy nomination thing, I was giggling because like that is a total goal of mine. I someday would love to ever be nominated for something like that. But right now, we're kind of just, to be honest with you, just riding the wave and enjoying this album. Like, that's our current goal right now, is just to really like feel amazing in the skin that we're in right now. And I know one big goal of ours, though, if I'm being honest, is we want to take advantage of streaming as much as possible. Because yeah. It's so crazy how that world has changed. Just like even within, since we've started as a band, like how much less albums you can sell to chart now because people right. just sell less albums. Yep. And streaming has become infinitely more important. Trying to get on playlists, like playlists to me are like becoming the new radio.
Dude, I have this in my notes. I was just going to say this to you. I know. Yeah. I completely agree with you, man.
It's so insane because that's how everyone gets their music now. So New Music Friday is out. All right, let's just play it and it'll be in the background throughout my day and hopefully they'll find us. You know, it's really crazy to see it all just evolving so fast.
Yep, absolutely. And you guys have been very successful with the streaming model. I mean, not even just the new stuff, your old stuff as well has done really well. And, you know, people are always saying, yeah, streaming, it's the future. And it's like, wait a second, no, it's the present. Like, it's happening yeah. now.
Yeah, it truly is. And I mean, like, speaking of the future, I keep thinking about that. Where is it going to go next? Like, I feel like it can't stop evolving. Like, there's going to be something that happens, and I don't know what. And no. It's interesting to think about sometimes.
It is. But no, I mean, you couldn't predict this. I mean, if you look back to 2008, you know, when you started the band, I mean, even at that point, iTunes and buying digital music wasn't even that big yet. You know, people did it because iPods were big, but most of it was mm-hmm. was either, you know, CDs or illegal downloading, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like pirating was huge in 2008. Yep. And I was talking to someone about that recently, and I felt like people in the industry were just racking their brains. Like, how do we get them to stop and so that we can make money again? And I felt like the platform of streaming now, whether it's like subscription based, they're just basically making a deal with everyone. They're like, all right, listen. All you have to pay is $10 a month, all right? And then you don't have to go through the pain of getting a torrent, hoping that it's not infected, and then, you know, and then, in fact, for $10, you'll get all the music you want. And they're like, all right, I guess that's more convenient. And then now that just become, like, the obvious choice instead of trying to download each album illegally. Like, I don't even know anyone that downloads illegally anymore.
No, it's true. It's true. I mean, I think I was just as guilty as everybody else. I'm not going to lie about that. I still bought music too, and I still do, but I mean, you know, the amount of like my music fandom and my consumption never could equal my bank account, you know, that was, and I mean, like a little bit sorry, not sorry, I guess for that. But now, I mean, geez, like kids growing up now in this era, you know, if you're, you know, let's say you're 13, 14 years old and you've only been getting into music in the last couple of years, let's say. Oh my God, you don't even know how good you have it.
Oh my God, absolutely.
Like the amount of CDs I bought, man, like I, cause I'm from Canada too. And some stuff was really expensive. It was, they'd call it an import or whatever. So, you
know, they do that? No way.
What's that?
I said, I didn't know they did that. Like labeled albums from overseas imports. They like upcharged you.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I sort, yeah, pretty much basically. Like once in a while you'd have, you know, most CDs were, let's say like between $14.99 and $18.99. in Canada. Oh, wow. So like still pretty expensive. Yeah. But if I wanted, like, I remember one record that I always wanted to buy, but I could never afford it, was Poison the Well, Opposite of December. Cause it was always $24.99 at the store. And I was like, oh, wow, man, like I can buy like two CDs, you know, of other, yeah, artists, but like, I really want the Poison the Well, you know, Opposite of December record. But the amount of records that, and I say records, but I mean CDs that I bought, oh, yeah, that like, that were absolute garbage and I hated, because like you had, yeah, to just roll the dice, you know, like, yeah, you just went, man, to the store. I don't know, what's this band, Crass? Okay, sure. Not knowing, yeah, I'm buying like the worst Crass record that everyone knows is garbage. I don't know, I'm just a kid like trying to get into punk rock, you know. So like some of those various albums I bought that just like I ended up like trading in or whatever, it's like so funny. Now it's like, yeah, oh, I can listen to Crass, and oh, now I, first of all, I know which songs to listen to get into the band,
yeah,
you know, and then second of all, like, if I don't like it, well, I didn't just spend 2 weeks of my allowance, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You just brought me back instead of remembering going back to FYE and trying, yeah, to see what new CDs were out, and I forgot they used to have that, you remember like the little, it's like they had headphones on it, and then, yeah, you could like click different albums and hear like a 15-second snippet. Like that was your only chance if you wanted to hear what you might be buying. Like, and it, yeah, it just had to be on there.
I know, but when they came out with that, the listing stations, that was like, oh, such, yeah, a game changer, man.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, it was like cool. I'd like go hang out in the record store for hours, just like on those listing stations. Like sometimes they'd have full records and stuff, and I just, you know, it was.
I got the same excitement as when I would be like at a, like a video rental place, which is also now a dead service, but like you could like test the video games while they had like all the consoles there.
Yeah,
that was always a good time.
Hell yeah, hell yeah, dude. Except there's always some like asshole kid hogging the machine for way, oh, too long.
Absolutely. But you're waiting there, and then your mom wants to go, and then you gotta go.
Exactly. Oh, I forgot to ask you the tradition of playing the clarinet on every album. Did you get to play your clarinet on, yeah, this new album?
I do. It's actually, so just a quick background, and I swear it's related. So my dad wanted me to be a clarinetist really badly because he played trumpet and he went to Berkeley and then he dropped out to be in a band. And it obviously like it worked for a while, but it wasn't totally sustainable in the end. Ended up having to like be that quintessential father busting his ass 9 to 5, support the family. And he just didn't want that to happen for me. And while I was in school, I, like I was saying, wanted to be in a band really badly. So he was fighting it tooth and nail. Well, anyways, the kind of long story short, it, he had cancer at the time.
Yeah.
And the time that he finally accepted my dream to do this was actually thanks to All Time Low when they let me perform on stage, because he saw my love for this and he was like, all right. So they called me and told me to take a year off of school. 2 weeks after they accepted it, he passed. But there was a song called Danny Boy that meant a lot to us because it was basically about a father talking to a son who's going off to war, saying like, when you leave and come back, I might not be here anymore.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened to me and him while I was going to college. And I wanted to always involve clarinet in this for that reason, but also I wanted to be able to write a song to honor him. And it took me a few years, and that song was called Dad's Song. And since then I haven't been able to do it again because it's just a really hard thing for me to write about.
Yeah.
But, I had this concept I really wanted to write about, and we finally were able to do it on this record called Unopened Windows. And it's basically about, like, you know, the window of opportunity of the things you wish you could have done, being like trapped inside of a house and watching it happen outside, like you're behind this unopened window. But so on that song, we on my dad's horn, which is the horn that we use for everything. Dan was the only guy my dad would let play his horn because Dan's really good at trumpet. And so, Dan plays the Danny Boy part in that, and that was featured in Dad's song before. But this time, I play it with the trumpet on clarinet, and I was just really, really stoked to do it in the song because it felt like I'm like playing with him. I don't know. It just it felt like that to me, and it was just, it really meant a lot.
Absolutely. No, it is really cool. And it's funny how I asked the question, the like kind of like cute question, and then it ends up getting kind of serious and stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's just the way things shake out.
Oh, yeah. No, but like with the clarinet in general, like per album, I think it only started in cinematic. No. It started in Horrible Kids, our EP. Because we didn't have it in the first one. But I always try to find a way to sneak a horn line or two in there. Like, I think in Duality, it was The Haunting. And then I think I actually played saxophone on the previous record, but I think I also snuck in clarinet on Upside Down somehow.
Yeah, it's funny. It must be funny when you're like working with a new producer or something and you're like, by the way,
yeah,
at some point I'm gonna walk in the studio with the clarinet and it's gonna get a little weird, so just, you know, yeah, embrace it, dude. I love it. Well, speaking of saxophone, Matt Appleton collaborated with you guys again. He's a friend
I
of mine
that.
From Real Big Fish. He's an awesome dude, and yeah, tell me how that relationship's kind of gone. I know it's been ongoing.
Absolutely. We met Matt a while back when he kind of swooped in and saved us for Duality. He became heavily involved with that, and he helped us like write and record some horn parts. And in fact, he wrote the horn hook through the chorus in Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. It was the first time I didn't have my hands totally on writing a horn part, because I always felt responsible for that. And right. I remember walking into his he has this like place in the woods. He's so cool, dude. He's the coolest man on the planet. Like, he has this house in the woods. He's so like outdoorsy. He loves beer. But anyways, I walk in and I hear like horns upstairs, and I was like, oh no, I need to go hear this right now. So I walk up. Because he also wrote some horn parts, and I'm like, cool, man. And back then, I'm like, I really hope this is awesome. And it was. I was blown away. And then I see him, like, with every horn imaginable in this room. I was like, you play all of these? Like, it's pretty neat, someone that can play woodwind and brass, and he can do that like it's nothing. Well, for this song to collaborate, Dan and I were writing the song in a hotel, and we were like, how cool would it be to have a sax solo? Like that typical crazy sax solo. We've never had a reason or a time for it, but like, this is it. And I was so pumped, because I listened to a lot of Tower of Power growing up, and there's a song called The Real Deal by them, and there was this amazing sax solo, a tenor sax solo in the middle of it, two of them actually. And I hit up Matt Appleton. I was like, dude, this song needs a sax solo, would you please do it? And he was immediately like, down, let's do it. And I gave him the song as a reference, and he just tore it to pieces. I love it. Anytime we can work with Matt, I'm always excited to do it, because he's just so good at everything he does.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, has it changed, though, in terms of production, who you're kind of aligning yourself with? Because, you know, obviously the sounds, you know, songwriting is one thing, but just getting the right sounds. I mean, a lot of rock, you know, rock producers don't have the knowledge in terms of like how to do electronic drums and programming and stuff, like, you know, the way that you guys are kind of doing it now.
Yeah, I know that you're absolutely right. Like, I think that's a huge reason why we went with Mike Green this time around was, you know, we, on the past two records, we were with Brandon 100% of the way for pretty much, and he's very pop oriented, and he was the first person to help us turn band into being able to involve that genre. And then Mike Green, I feel like, has been phenomenal at merging the two. So taking knowledge that we've cultivated from the past two records, and then we're like, we had a meeting with him. He was just so excited to get on board for the project, and we've heard what he's done with his projects in the past. We're like, this is a no brainer. We got to go with him. He's gonna help us get like these really awesome guitar tones and bring the drums really to life, as well as having this pop production. And he works with people that have that pop production. But what you're saying, the producer thing, something popped in my head is I forgot, you know, like when we used to do, when we first started recording records, we always had like the same process of we would come in first with the full band, and then it would be pre-pro for maybe a week, and then it's all right, now we record drums, now we record bass and guitars, then vocals. And it was always that, like a very organized, yeah, orderly thing. Yeah. And that's totally changed for us. It's not like that at all anymore. Like, now we go in, like with Mike, it was just he had an open amount of time. We just came in every day with like Dan and myself, and we would just write a song, and then we're like, all right, then we would come back and write a song, and come back and write a song, until we had a large enough catalog that we knew we could narrow it down into what we would love. And then the recording process is like, all right, well, we recorded songs while writing. We recorded guitar while writing, so we could just keep that. Now we just got basically, you know, we already did bass, so we can keep that. And we can, I did vocals the day of writing it, so we can keep, like, we'll do it all kind of as it's going, instead of like, all right, everything is like this. The only thing that's still like that is drums. Like, we'll have a drum day, and everything else is basically like, kind of as it goes. It's more freeform, it feels spontaneous, and yeah. I love it so much more.
Yeah, absolutely. The old traditional model is pretty much dead at this point, you know? Because I guess that it just was, you know, the whole thing was the drums laid the foundation for mm-hmm. a record typically, right? So you had, you know, every record I've ever made, even still, it's like, okay, the first day we're in some like really, really big studio to record drums in this big room, you know what I mean? Like, then you know, you get these awesome drum sounds, and then the rest of it's done in, like, you know, basically like a bedroom size studio. You know, maybe yeah. not, but, you know, a smaller studio.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's funny, like, I'm hearing about a lot of bands literally recording drums last.
Yeah.
And tracking everything just to like a click track or just like MIDI drums, and then
yeah.
that way you can decide later, like, okay, well, if this vocal, let's say this vocal, you know, melody ends up changing and like extends a little longer, well, then we can have the drum fill like come in right, you know, when that vocal stops,
yeah.
rather than over top of it if like the drums have already been recorded. So
absolutely.
I think it totally makes sense to do that, to do things, to just kind of do it as they come. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. No one can tell. People might say they can, but there's no way you can tell
yeah.
if something was recorded before something else, you know?
Yeah.
So that's
absolutely right. It gives you a lot more flexibility. And yeah, I agree. Yeah. No one can tell that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys are on tour right now.
Yes.
Headlining. With a new record,
yes.
and, you know, the new songs are new for your fans. I'm sure a lot of them coming out are on board and know the songs. Some of them probably don't.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them are probably surprised. How is that going over with, you know, you guys are known for being, especially you, known for being such a dynamic frontman. Is doing this music, is it different in a live setting?
Honestly, it's different in a really awesome way. Like, we have live show really in our heads when we were writing these songs. Like, this song, we put a song in the set called Criminal Minds, and literally, like, I made a tempo based off me jumping. I was like, all right, I let's do a song to this tempo. Like, I was like, okay, like, this will be awesome. And so we
yeah.
set, because I even like wrote the melody to beat on the drum. It's like, to identify. So it'd be fun to sing while you're jumping. And so we threw it in there because of that. And I'm watching it happen now. And I'm like, yes, like, this is awesome. Like, we're finally like seeing them come to life, and they're loving it. We've only had two shows, and we're trying a bunch of new stuff. Like, for instance, like with the horn thing, Dan and I have like this horn battle. Like, he plays, like, we go back and forth. I play sax, he plays trumpet. Max has his first like drum feature, and we're playing some new songs. We did a medley of like from old to new, and we're doing a lot of fun stuff, and it's a long set, but it's the longest we've ever done, but I'm really having a good time.
That's great. Yeah. I the thing that I always do too is like, if I hear a riff, I'm writing something and I'm not sure, it's the headbang test. If you can headbang to it, it's
yeah.
good, you know?
Hell yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, no, man, that's funny. No, I just asked that because, you know, not because I'm trying to say, like, trying to get, you know, make you say that it's harder or it's worse or whatever, just because it's different. And like, when you're talking about, you know, drums being, I assume that you're using, you know, drum tracks to get those kinds of sounds. Like, how else would you do it? In a way, like, that stuff isn't what you're used to and isn't what people are used to in terms of like a big rock drum sound. But when you're talking about like 808s and stuff, like, there's nothing that sounds bigger than that. So when you're talking about like winning over a crowd, and like all of a sudden it's like, it just sounds huge because you have this sub, you know, it's a different kind
layered,
of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, blending those styles of music, I think live could kind of really actually work in your favor.
But it's perfect because I feel like that was such a huge focus of ours. Like, in fact, on this album, we have like those live drums on every single song, and that was a very huge priority to us. During the Upside Down era, we weren't thinking about it. You know, like, we're just like, let's write the song. Perfect. This has the tones that we want. All right, next song. And with this one, we're like, no, we need to make sure that this is there. So if there is any program stuff, it's meant to be there, layered with the live element. So it does have that bigger, wider, maybe more sub-based feel. And it's working out great. Like, I get to see Max have the time of his life on stage.
Awesome. That's great, man. That's great. So I got a fan question here, if you don't mind. We kind of covered this a little bit, but it is a cool question. It's from Tara Thompson. She lives in Newfoundland, Canada.
Awesome. Hello, Tara.
And she says, Cody used to cover All Time Low on YouTube, and he sang Coffee Shop Soundtrack with them in 2008. That drove him to start Set It Off, and it really so it felt like really everything was coming full circle. She says she's curious as to what your reaction was when you got the offer for the All Time Low Canadian tour in 2015 and what that was like for you.
It really was a full circle feeling. Like, you know, like since that performance, I remember how nervous and just unaware I was, like, as a kid, like being around all those bands on that alt press tour. I was like, I was watching all my favorite bands play right there. And I was like, and someday, obviously, it was like, someday it'd be amazing to tour with these guys. But you never know, like, if it's ever going to happen.
Right.
And we had to really, obviously prove ourselves to even have an opportunity to get a shot at something like that. So to get that offer was a nice feeling, in the sense that, awesome, this is coming full circle, but also, like, cool, I feel like we've gotten to a professional enough level to be able to tour with those bands. It was it was really cool, and it was really nice of them to reach out there. By the way, some of the best tour hosts ever. They treat everyone so well, and I love that. I think that's so important, to like really take care of everyone that's on the tour that you're with, and they do not hold back on doing that.
No, they're some of the best, and great crew as well. Absolutely. It's too bad that the tour was just Canada, because it was probably only like 10 shows or something.
Yeah, but we made the most of it.
Yeah, we did a tour with Good Charlotte a while back too. It was the same thing. It was like 10 shows and it's over. And I'm like, I talked to Joel like twice. Like, shit, man. Bummer, dude. Like, wherever, you know, the drives are so long.
Can we just
and
do it again?
No time to hang out. I was like, can we just do an American tour of like 40 shows, you know? Well, dude, hey, man, thanks so much for taking the time. What else is there to tell the people? Obviously, Midnight is out now. You guys are on tour. You got videos to watch. You got songs to stream or vinyl to buy, whatever it is. But what else is happening?
One thing that I'm really excited about right now is, while we were making this record, we had our videographer with us throughout the entire process. And there's like, you see everything. Like, we didn't want to filter anything. Like, if we got in an argument, it's there. If you saw something being created, it's there. It's kind of like a mini documentary series that we're calling Midnight Thoughts. I think episodes 1 through 3 are out right now on our YouTube channel. It's just youtube.com/setitoff. But I would love for people to check that out if they want to see like the behind the scenes of the creation of Midnight. And also, we're still like planning a lot more touring internationally, and also we're looking at possibly doing another U.S. tour before the year is over. So we're going to be on the road, to just keep tabs with us on social media. We would love to see everyone come out and have some fun.
That's right. Yeah, no, I see you guys are going to the UK and Europe pretty much right after this tour wraps up too. So all the best with that, dude, and I hope the pipes remain strong.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
We don't talk about singing that much on this show, but it's doing okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing good so far. It's just sleep for me, man. Like, as long as I can get 8 hours, I'll just all oversleep like a piece of shit till 4 p.m. if I need to. Whatever I have to do to keep it safe.
Awesome, dude. Well, Cody, thank you again so much, man. And, good luck with this album cycle if I don't see you around. And have a great rest of the tour.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, really, one last thing. I'm going to play a new Set It Off song. What song should I rip?
Ooh, I want you to play Happy All the Time.
Happy All the Time. Here it is. All right, I'm Lead Singer Syndrome. Cody, thanks so much, man.
Thanks a lot.
When's the last time I felt this old? I dug myself a cannon to hide my woes. Lost myself somewhere in the deep. Down with
it's okay. You're not crazy. God had changed us all to love the sweet. Let it out and scream, I'm okay. I'm not crazy. Cause the tears remind me I'm alive. It's fine to not be happy all the time. Sometimes living feels like a chore.
So there is brand new Set It Off, Cody and the Boys with Happy All the Time. What a great episode, right? So good to hear all about his backstory, super interesting stuff, and just the roller coaster ride that has been their development, their sound, everything. Very, very cool stuff. Thank you so much, Cody, for taking the time out of your busy touring schedule to have a chat with me. Next week, we will be back, I promise, and no more vacations for me for quite some time, so please hit the subscribe button. If you like the show, write a review on iTunes, tell a friend, tell a loved one, join the All Access Club, hit me up, call the hate line, do whatever it is you want to do. Thank you so much, everybody, for everything. Peace and love. I'll see you next week.